of Economic Development Committee to order. Chair notes that a quorum is not present. We will start with House File 1398 with Rep. Hill, Josiah Hill. We'll start with informational hearing, and then we will make the motion to re-refer this once we have a quorum. Mr. Hill, can you explain your bill?
Wonderful.
Oh, Representative Hill, I'm sorry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair Hassan and committee members. It's a pleasure to be here. Chair members, thank you for the opportunity to hear House File 1398. This is a bill to appropriate funds to the Community Energy Transition Grant Program, and it was created to support communities that will be deeply impacted by the retirement of some of the state's largest remaining power plants as we transition to carbon-free electricity generation. For each of the communities impacted, the plants they host, they make up between 30% and 70% of the local tax base, and this includes the Allen S. King Generation Plant, which is located in the city of Oak Park Heights, which is in my district, and I'm pretty familiar with that set of challenges, and we have a few testifiers here that will help you understand it even more clearly. These plants will also provide currently provide hundreds of high-quality family-sustaining union jobs in the areas where they're located. And as we transition to carbon-free in our future, these plants that have powered our region for decades are headed towards retirement in very short time. The transition to carbon-free energy will have widespread benefits, but the retirements of the plants will have impacts that are concentrated on a set of the host communities and the workers that are employed there. The grant funds in this bill can play a key role in supporting local planning and economic development, and this bill advances that goal by putting in place both funding and programmatic enhancements to enhance the program's ability to support impacted communities. Funding for this program and much of the language you see in the bill were included in last year's Jobs, Energy, and Commerce Omnibus Bill, which was agreed to but not passed. And the $10 million in House File 1398 matches this year's governor's recommendation for this program. Testifiers accompanying me today include the mayors of both Oak Park Heights and Cohasset. We have Mayor McCumber here to my left, and Mayor McDowell, who's here in the gallery with us. We also have Shane Zart, who's here with the Coalition of Utility Cities, to answer any questions you may have as you consider the House file. Unfortunately, I will have to speed away here in just one moment for another committee hearing, but I'm happy to stand for any questions that you may have in advance of that.
Thank you, Rep. Hill. Okay, I'm told that we have a quorum. I'm going to make the motion to refer this House File 1398 to the Climate and Energy Finance. And then we go ahead with your first testifier. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and Committee, my name is Mary McCumber, and I'm the Mayor of Oak Park Heights. First, I want to thank Representative Hill for being a champion for our community on these issues and thank the committee for hearing this bill. Oak Park Heights is a city of just under 5,000 located along the St. Croix River. I'm here today because we are also the home to the Allen S. King plant, a coal-fired plant. The King plant is now scheduled to retire at the end of 2028, more than 10 years sooner than the 2040 that was originally expected. In 2021, our community was able to receive a grant through this program, which enabled a fiscal study and a utility feasibility study to help our community determine development options for the future on the plant site. One of the things those dollars helped facilitate was a local stakeholder process and the appointment of an advisory panel to ensure the community is both aware and engaged in our economic future. Oak Park Heights is also in a very unique situation. We have very little developable land because we are landlocked between our surrounding communities and the St. Croix River to the east. For us, the development of the King plant site itself will be an essential component of the transition, but it also comes with complications. Most significantly, the river carries a wild and scenic river designation, which makes redevelopment very complex. As we get closer to the plant retirement, we are gaining a better understanding of the issues, but the urgency also increases to finalize and execute our redevelopment plans. In the first round of grants helped us understand our needs better. Future rounds will be essential to rounding out the complex planning and implementation we need to make our redevelopment vision a reality. And part of that, the King plant right now contributes 32% to our property tax base, and with losing that, redevelopment is really, really crucial. Last year, I served with other stakeholders on DEED's Energy Transition Advisory Committee. That brought forth numerous stakeholders together to discuss and better understand issues that power plant communities and workers are facing. Bills like this are where the rubber meets the road, and the state's efforts to support communities like mine. I thank you again for hearing us today, and stand ready for any questions.
Thank you. I believe we have a second testifier. Please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed. And I note to keep testimony short because we have a full agenda today.
Madam Chair Hassan, committee members, thank you. I am Andy McDonald, mayor of the city of Cohasset. My story is very similar to Mayor McCumber's. Cohasset is a community of about 2,700 residents located in northern Minnesota, Itasca County. We are home to Minnesota Power's largest coal plant, the Boswell Energy Center. Boswell is woven into the fiber of our community. The plant currently represents about 55% of our city's tax base, but in some years has been as high as 70%. The roughly 180 jobs at Boswell are high-quality jobs that pay well above the median income in our area, but the plant also indirectly supports 100 more jobs and economic activity. As you know, Boswell's days are numbered. In November, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission approved a plan that will cease coal operations at the final two Boswell units in 2029 and 2035. This transition will change our community forever. We're working actively to diversify our tax base to absorb the coming impacts, but that work is incredibly difficult and takes time, resources, and even where a city like ours does everything we can, the efforts may not come close to fully replacing what we stand to lose. For example, we are working toward a riverside redevelopment project that will include housing, a marina, retail, and a hotel sporting facilities. This, coupled with industrial projects we are also working to accomplish, will be very, I am a small town mayor. I apologize for my misspeaking here. Sorry.
Fine.
The grants in this bill will help advance those efforts and others. As the committee may be aware, Cohasset was one of the communities that was unable to participate in the first round of grants through the Community Energy Transition Grant Program because we were located outside of XL service territory. Cohasset has been a proud host to a plant that has powered our region for decades. The success of northern Minnesota's Iron Range, our timber industry, and even tourism have been powered for decades by Boswell Energy Center. This bill represents the exact type of collaboration we should be having between the state and local governments, bringing the state's resources to bear to support locally directed economic development efforts. We urge you to pass it this year. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. We'll hold questions. We have one last testifier. Please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Evan Mulholland. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and we're here in support of this bill. As some of you may know, our organization has advocated pretty strongly for the rapid transition away from fossil fuels, including the Boswell plant. But I'm here because, you know, through that process, we learned how important that plant is for the people and the workers in the community of Cohasset, and of course, the other host communities as well. And, you know, part of the transition requires all of us to support these communities as they go through this transition. I think it's our obligation. I think it's the state's obligation, too. You know, these workers spent their careers keeping the lights on and keeping these plants going and safe. And I support this bill. My organization supports this bill. And I urge you to support this bill. And I just wanted to, you know, I sent a letter. I wanted to be here in person so that the people in Cohasset know that, you know, we're here to help with this bill. We ask you to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill? All right. Final word on your bill, Rep. Hill.
Just want to thank you again, Chair Hassan, for the opportunity to be here, and members. We owe it to these communities. They hosted these generation plants for decades. They helped, as our previous speaker mentioned, keep our lights on around Minnesota, and now it's time to stand with them in their time of need. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair renews her motion that House File 1398 be re-referred to the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. You're on your way. Thank you. I would like to introduce the 11th and 12th grade students from Nora Classical Academy, St. Paul. Thank you for being here with us. I believe you're sitting all the way in the back. Chair acknowledges your presence. Thank you for being here. I also would like to acknowledge the presence of a large members of the indigenous community and many BIPOC folks from my district. So thank you for being here today. We're moving around in the agenda. Up next, we have House File 1280 from Representative Richardson. All right, Rep. Richardson, would you like to move your bill to be included in the omnibus bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, and in order to get the bill in the shape I'd like to incorporate the A1 amendment, and I'd like to move that amendment.
All right, would you explain the A1 amendment?
Yes, the A1 amendment clarifies the appropriation to the center. Okay. It clarifies that $10 million will be available until June 30th, 2025, and then beginning in fiscal year 2026, the base appropriation will be $2 million. And it also requires a report to be made to the committees with jurisdiction.
The A1 is before us. Any discussion? All in favor of adopting the A1, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
Well, motion carries. A1 is adopted. We also have, I believe, other amendments. Okay. Who introduces the A2?
Oh, Madam Chair, did you want us to present before the A?
We can do either way.
Okay.
Let's just go through the introduction of the bill, and then we can do the amendment.
Okay.
The bill is before us as amended. Chair Richardson, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1280, as amended, provides a direct appropriation to the Center for Economic Inclusion. The center is the nation's first organization dedicated to exclusively closing the racial wealth gaps and creating regional economies that work for everyone. This bill would address the known disparities in access to capitals for entrepreneurs facing barriers to growth with an initial investment of $10 million and a base appropriation beginning in 2026 of $2 million. There is both a moral and economic imperative for this work. As background, in 2020, the Minnesota House became the first state and the first chamber in the nation to declare racism a public health crisis with House Resolution Number 1. It passed with bipartisan support and created the House Select Committee on Racial Justice. That began an important conversation on the cost of inequality in our nation and in our state. In fact, we spent time analyzing the 2020 Citigroup study. The large bank undertook the research work to put a price tag on the cost to the economy as a result of discrimination against African Americans. And they found that between the year 2000 and 2020, that over $16 trillion were lost to the U.S. Gross domestic product as a result of discriminatory practices, including education and access to business loan. Specifically, the Citigroup study noted key areas of racial gaps relevant to this bill. $13 trillion lost in potential business revenue because of discriminatory lending to African-American entrepreneurs, with an estimated 6.1 million jobs not generated as a result, and $2.7 trillion in income loss because of disparities in wages. Citibank pointed out that if the racial gaps were closed today, we could see $5 trillion of additional gross domestic product over the next 5 years. We also spent time with economist Dr. Bruce Corey, who presented the cost of inequality for the state of Minnesota, as billions are also lost to our state economy as a result of inequality. Not acting to reverse discriminatory practices will continue to exact a cost, so this bill is an important step forward. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Suzanne Kelly. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Center for Economic Inclusion. Our founder and CEO, Tawana Black, could not be here as she is traveling this morning. First, I'd like to say thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Hansen, and members of the committee for hearing House File 1280. Thank you, Representative Richardson, for your steadfast support to the work of economic inclusion. For those of you unfamiliar with the center, we are the nation's first organization dedicated exclusively to equipping public and private sector employers and policymakers to close racial wealth gaps and create regional economies that work for everyone. We take a systemic, data-informed approach to solving the racial inequities in the state of Minnesota. Over the next 5 years, our team of 30 diverse Minnesotans will educate and equip 20,000 leaders, employers, and policymakers with the research, education, organizational support services, and investments in job creation to ensure that 3 million people experience a racially just, inclusive, and economically vibrant economy. We will achieve this vision working in solidarity with Black, Indigenous, Latino, and Asian workers, business owners, and racial and economic justice advocates across the state. We will apply the direct appropriation we are seeking at multiple levels, statewide, to produce sustainable, exponential returns that will be measured in jobs created, business revenue growth, and people taking anti-racist action to create racially just, equitable and inclusive policies, workplaces, and systems so that all people experience an inclusive economy. In 2023, we project we will prepare more than 2,400 people to take action to create a racially just, equitable, and inclusive economy, impacting 360,000 people each day. With this investment, we can accelerate and grow this impact by over 100% in 2 years to prepare 5,330 people to take action and impacting almost 800,000 people each day. In addition, we measure this year we will support 60 Black, Indigenous, and Latina-owned businesses in growth sectors, helping them increase revenues, create family-sustaining jobs, and meet supply chain needs. This investment would enable up to a 50% increase in businesses served. This includes helping businesses grow annual revenues by $11.1 million and add 112 jobs to Minnesota's economy. Investing in our solutions will equip Minnesota's public and private sector employers with research tools, racial equity indices, racial equity assessments, toolkits, and more, and practices to dismantle systemic racism and deeply embed principles of anti-racism to accelerate job growth and equitable wages, investing in BIPOC communities to build a local, diverse, and resilient supply chain to accelerate business and economic growth. We will disrupt stagnant, exclusive investments and unleash the power of capital in communities of color. We will drive shared accountability for achieving inclusive growth by evaluating proposed policies and solutions for their impact on closing or widening stagnant racial disparities that threaten the state's economic competitiveness and growth. We will activate individuals to take actions that close racial employment, income, and wealth gaps in communities as a result of engagement in the center's learning experiences. To understand the challenges that Minnesotans of color face, we must grapple with some startling statistics. While unemployment is dropping, wage disparities persist while the need for talent in high growth resilient industries grows. According to Next Street Research, white entrepreneurs attract 17 times more equity capital than black entrepreneurs. Black business owners are 2.4 times more likely to be denied financing than their white peers. And according to the Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Sciences and the Small Business Credit Survey, white business owners have 3 times the wealth of their black counterparts. Further, while black-owned businesses reported applying for loans at 10 percentage points higher than white at 10 percentage points higher than white-owned firms, their approval rates are 19% lower. Even among firms with good business credit and positive owner credit and those with revenues over $1 million. In the same category, when approved, 40% of minority-owned firms were approved for the full amount of the loan request, compared with 68% of their white peers. Black households now own just 10 cents of wealth, respectively, for every dollar of wealth owned by white households. So why the Center for Economic Inclusion? The center has a singular focus on inclusive growth. We facilitate a smart approach to cross-sector and community-driven development. We provide data-informed solutions and thought leadership. The center is also an organization that understands the need to reach communities across the state. We have already established relationships with communities in greater Minnesota, and we are in the process of building out our relationships with regional development commissions to reach our increasingly diverse communities in outstate Minnesota. Madam Chair, this morning we are joined by one of our partners, with your permission, who would like to offer testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. If it's a brief testimony, we would take it. But let's just make sure that it's very brief. All right. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. D'Angelo Sunkison, CEO and co-founder of NAO Partners.
This mics are very soft. Can you get it closer to you? Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Is that better?
Yes.
Good morning, and members of the committee. My name is D'Angelo Sunkison, the CEO and co-founder of NAO Partners. We are a commercial real estate and urban planning consulting practice based here in St. Paul. Our relationship with the center has been longstanding for our entire existence. We are a four-year-old firm. During the pandemic, when we lost 90% of our revenue, the center did not drop us as a sub-consultant, and we're fortunate that they didn't. We went on to work with them and create a national award-winning economic competitiveness and inclusion plan for Ramsey County. When our commercial corridors were devastated by civil unrest, the center was there to partner with us in bringing private capital to the reinvestment along our corridors to leverage the public and nonprofit capital. Additionally, the center has leveraged their expertise and reach nationally to bring in over $5 million of funding that would have not made it into this region, targeted specifically to black, indigenous, and Latina businesses in our metro. An investment in the center is not only a good investment for our future, but it is the only think and action tank designed to build an inclusive economy for the entire state of Minnesota. And so their leadership is also investing in the leadership of our future. And so with that, I'll stop.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I believe we have several amendments. First, we have the A2. Lead Kosnick, you have the A2?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, this was presented before we had the author's amendment. And the main change that I see in the author's amendment, Madam Chair and committee, is basically that we added a ongoing appropriation, if I understand that right. But what the A2 amendment does is add, instead of a 10% administrative withholding from the grants, mm-hmm. it brings it down to 5, which is more in line with most of the granting that we do, but it's highlighted even more so when I was provided the 2020 organization exempt from income tax forms. There was only grants on that form of $117,399. Salaries remain constant at about $1.2 million. And so what I want to make sure is that the money that the state appropriates, if we decide that's what we're going to do, actually goes out to help the businesses and the community that it's intended to, rather than just paying, you know, $1.2 million in a variety of salaries when the grants are significantly less than what the contributions and grants. For instance, in 2022, the grants were $2.6 million, and we only looks like on line 13 of their form, $117,000 in grants. So that's why we have this amendment here, to make sure that the money goes to the community and the businesses and the entrepreneurs to strengthen their communities and their businesses. And so I would urge members to support limiting the amount of administrative cost out of the grants on the A2.
Thank you. Rep. Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kosnick, for the amendments as well. In conversation with the center, it became really clear to me that there are additional program costs related to not only technical assistance, but the support that they're providing to entrepreneurs. That includes supporting them with land acquisitions and other types of activities. That I think would be important that we would be ensuring that they would be able to do that support, knowing that these are entrepreneurs that face barriers. Because the bill is being laid over, I think that we could do some work in terms of clarifying what those program costs would look like, to give more clarity around the additional types of supports and technical assistance that would be needed. But at this time, I would ask members for a no vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Discussion?
Yeah, just real brief. I know we have a few other bills here, but I appreciate the comments that we do have time to do some more work and clarify how we're spending the money. I'm not certain that I'm comfortable with the ongoing appropriations, but I you know, with some better guardrails, I think maybe we could get there. But I think it's real concerning when we offer these grants and the majority of the funds seem to be going to salaries and other compensations, and just a limited amount is actually going to the communities. I don't know that that's the most recent history, but just kind of looking at some of the financials that were presented, public documents, it brings a concern. Members, I think it would be appropriate even at this time to make sure that we, the minimum guardrail, we're not even telling them how to spend the money. We're just saying don't spend more than 5% of the grant on administrative costs. I don't think that's a heavy burden to bear on this bill for $10 million and $2 million ongoing appropriations in the base. So members, it's just a fiscally prudent thing to do to make sure that the funds that the state entrusts the center are used for building up the community and the economic development. So, members, I do think it's appropriate to pass this amendment that would limit the administration of the grants to 5% instead of 10.
Thank you. I do want to acknowledge that this bill will be laid over, and this is not the last time we will see this bill. At this time, we're going to vote on the A2. All those in favor of adopting the A2, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. I believe we also have A3 amendment. Who is who has the A3 amendment? Representative Perryman, go ahead and tell us about this amendment.
All right. Thank you, Chair.
I'm
short and everything. Maybe I should put this like on my.
No, it's not your height. I think. It's
so
fine.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Richardson, nice to see you again. Thank you for your bill. I first wanted to say that I truly appreciate the spirit and the intentions that you have for this bill. Economic growth is near to dear to my heart. Obviously, I'm outstate in a more of a rural area, but near and dear to my heart. So thank you for that. So with that said, in the spirit that I'm presenting A3 is to tie this group, together with Chamber of Commerce groups and looking at perhaps taking that $10 million and giving $5 million to Chamber of Commerce. And they would have their metrics of $500 given to them per member up to $500,000. They would have to report to you, and they would grant these grants out to their own chamber members. But I see such a great tie with the Center for Economic Inclusive with Minnesota Chambers that wouldn't it be wonderful to work with the Center for Economic Inclusive and other chambers that are doing the same thing. They want to build. And diversity, equity, inclusion, that's what our chambers are doing as well. And that's why this bill comes from me with a great spirit of heart and maybe taking that $10 million by doing this will make it worth more like $20 million across the whole state of Minnesota. So that's the intention and why I present A3 to you today. And knowing that we are laying it over, if you even think of this as a good idea, I would love it to be, and I would love to work with you too. So members, I please ask for A3.
Okay. I want to acknowledge, is there any member from the chamber that's available to speak on this? Probably not. Okay. Rep. Richardson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Perryman, for bringing the A3 amendment forward. You know, one thing I just want to ensure that we highlight related to this work is the fact that the Center for Economic Inclusion, their work is exclusively focused on closing the state's racial gaps. And as the Chamber of Commerce, as I know, have started to do work around diversity, equity, inclusion, it's not their singular focus. And understanding that nationally over the last 20 years, there was more than $16 trillion lost because of discrimination within our various systems, including the $13 trillion that was lost in potential business revenue because of discriminatory lending practices, and the fact that we're also seeing that inequality here, I think it's important that these dollars are focused on that work of closing the racial gap, and also understanding that the center is prepared to work statewide as well. So for those reasons, I would respectfully ask for a no vote on this as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep. Perryman, do you have follow up on that?
Chair, I would just like to make a comment, and that is I am disappointed in some of the numbers you just said with disgrace or discrimination and equity, and know that because I am so near and dear to the Chamber of Commerce, we are really, really working on that. So when you say it's going to go statewide, please, if you don't mind, let me work with you or the center and see if we can go a little bit out state with some chambers or any businesses that might come to me after they know I'm doing this legislative work that maybe I perhaps could come to you. Awesome. Thank you.
All right. All those in favor of adopting the A3 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed say no.
No. Okay.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We have one final amendment on this bill. A4, who has the A4?
I do, Madam Chair.
All right, go ahead, explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My amendment was covered a little bit briefly what you had stated earlier about reporting. I believe firmly that when we have taxpayer money that's applied to grants, the amounts need to be recorded. We need to report on them. We owe a responsibility to our taxpayers to make sure that money's being spent correctly, and I appreciate the added to that. The one thing that was not included in your amendment was the tax returns. So I'd like to offer that as an amendment on the A4.
Thank you, Rep. Wiener. Rep. Richardson.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, and thank you, Representative Wiener, for the amendment. I would just note that the amendment doesn't say tax returns. And I think if what we're talking about are the 990s, those are in fact publicly available. So I would recommend a no vote here, but I do think that we are all in agreement that the funds appropriated need to be there needs to be a report that comes back to justify the spend. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Discussion on the amendment. Lead Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Weiner, this is a good amendment, and I appreciate that there was some movement in the author's amendment for this. But when you look at the history here, where I believe even last year there was a million-dollar grant that just came out last night, one of the deed reports, the type of grant is escaping me right now. But looking at the 2020 990, only $117,399 were given in grants, and this bill is over $10 million and with ongoing appropriations. I think it's important that we do hold our organizations accountable to the taxpayers, and that the amount of grants that were received and the into the organizations, the amounts going out, is just abhorred, really. You know, less than 118,000 with 2.6 taken in. That's really troublesome. And then looking, the salaries and expenses, compensation, were significantly more than the grants given out, and that's a problem. So we have 1.2 in salaries and compensation and only 117 in grants given out in 2020. And so that's a problem. Representative Weiner, I think that your part of your amendment that asks for the tax forms is important. And if it's not exactly right here, we do have time to do it, or we could do an oral amendment to ask for the 990s to hold our grantees accountable when we give them state dollars. So members, I would support the Weiner amendment, the A4, and ask members to vote for it.
Thank you, Rep. Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to note that the numbers that Lead Kosnick was talking about was from 2020. And so I would like to give Ms. Kelly an opportunity to respond as well.
Ms. Kelly.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the question. Yes, our most current 990 forms, which are being worked on now, you will see quite a difference. First of all, we are, and in 2020 particularly, we're a growing startup organization. So there was an increase in the amount of salaries and benefits charged to, or that you see reflected there, because we were growing our staff and team. Once that team was in place, and it continues to grow, but at a slower pace. We launched the Vanguard Fund in 2021 and the Vanguard Accelerator in 2022 in response to the demand from business owners and investors who were desiring these new models. We won the Chase Challenge in 2022, and that is when we began to expand our services. And in January of this year, we awarded several grants. But now that that accelerator fund has been up and running, you will see more grants being issued out to the community in larger amounts because the infrastructure has now been built. It was not there in 2020.
Thank you. Rep. Weiner, do you have last word on your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess with reporting like this, it's not just accountability to the taxpayers, but it can also be shown as your success as far as how the grants and stuff are going. So I strongly urge that we accept the amendment.
All right. We are on the A4 amendment. All those in favor of adopting the A4 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion does not carry. Discussion on the bill. Lead Kosnick.
Just real briefly, we talked about some of the concerns in the amendments, and you know, I like the stated intent of the organization and the work that they're doing. I hope that you will be more successful going forward. I look forward to seeing your more recent
990s and impact on the community. But right now, we don't have confidence in the numbers here. With the ongoing appropriation, I think it would be more appropriate to just do a one-time and a more manageable amount that the center, that we know the center is more accustomed to. $10 million is significantly more than what they've had in the past. And so I don't think I can support this at this time, but we can work on the bill and scalable, Madam Chair, so perhaps it'll be more amicable down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Lead Kasnick. We will have more time on this bill because it's being laid over. Any other discussion? Representative Katisa Otun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill forward. Ms. Black, the CEO and creator of this organization, is a constituent of mine, and I'm just really excited to see the work that this organization continues to do. I do appreciate that you added in your author's amendment some additional reporting requirements so that we are able to see how things are growing and going, and I think it's really going to be wonderful to get that feedback at the state so that we can see the impact that this organization is going to have on communities of color all across Minnesota.
Thank you. Last word on your bill. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present the bill today. I also want to thank Ms. Kelly for coming to testify as well in support of the bill. I think it's important to recognize the costs to our economy when we are not closing the racial inequality gap. And I also think it's important to recognize that one-time investments are not going to close those gaps that are centuries in the making. And so look forward to further conversation on the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson, for your commitment to equity and inclusion. We started with this committee talking about, economic inequities and the wealth disparities that persist in this state. So I'm glad you brought this bill forward. And Chair renews her motion that 1280 be laid over for possible inclusion on the omnibus bill. Up next, we have House File 1528 with Rep. Norris. We have Representative Norris here. He is, okay. Come on down. Welcome to committee, Rep. Norris. Chair moves that House File 1528 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. Rep. Norris, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, members of the committee. It's great to be with you this morning. This bill, House File 1528, focuses on the New Markets Tax Credit. It's a tool designed to maximize use of federal dollars and promote business development in areas where traditional commercial capital may not flow as readily. It's designed to work in tandem with the federal New Markets Tax Credit Program. Minnesota has not been attracting its fair share of these federal dollars lately, in part because of the lack of a state counterpart. These dollars must be invested in small businesses with principal operations located in an area where either, one, the income is less than or equal to 80% of the state family median income, or two, the poverty rate is 20% or greater. This bill would generate $120 million in investment in these businesses, split evenly between the metro area and greater Minnesota. An investor could get a credit for 50% of the investment, essentially creating a 50-50 public-private investment. These investments would be made in qualified community development entities and deed would administer the credit. I want to thank Lead Kosnick for his support of this bipartisan bill. And with that, Chair Hassan, I'm happy to turn it over to my testifiers.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Mary Stoik. I'm the Director of Tax Credit Lending for Sunrise Banks. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about the proposed state New Market Tax Credits program and express support for it on behalf of Sunrise. For over 20 years, the Federal New Market Tax Credits Program has attracted and leveraged investor capital to help businesses and nonprofits start and expand. These organizations bring jobs, services, increased tax revenue, and consumers to the most impoverished communities in our state. Sunrise has participated in the federal program since 2008, and we have been fortunate enough to receive 7 allocation awards to date, totaling just under $350 million. Our allocation alone has helped create and retain over 8,300 jobs and attracted over $80 million in additional investment for businesses and nonprofits across the Twin Cities in places like West St. Paul, South Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, and St. Paul's East Side. Beyond the Twin Cities, our fellow community development entities have leveraged the federal program to invest in over 200 projects across the state in places ranging from Ely, Duluth, and St. Cloud to Winona, Worthington, and Red Lake. This past fall, New Markets helped Tom Peterson's manufacturing company, Climate by Design International, break ground on a new $34 million manufacturing facility that will create and retain over 300 jobs, all paying competitive wages, offering full benefits, and providing stable employment and career path opportunities for people living in the Owatonna community, where the median income there is less than 64% of the state's average. 5 years ago, the program also helped local nonprofit Project for Pride and Living acquire and renovate 2 historic commercial buildings on Franklin Avenue in South Minneapolis to create a new job training center hub. In 2021 alone, PPL created and retained 132 total FTE jobs and provided career and job training to 306 unique individuals through this facility, which is located in a census tract exhibiting a poverty rate of 60.4%, an unemployment rate of 13.9%, and median income at 15.89% of the state's average. These stories are not unique. Businesses and nonprofits across Minnesota experience needs like this every year. I'm confident that many of you in this room have organizations in your districts that would benefit from wider access to this program. I urge you to expand support for this program for Minnesota with a proposed bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. I believe you have another testifier.
Yes, Chair Hassan, Alex Stepanek.
Please come to the testifying table. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alex Stepanek. I work for a company called Advantage Capital. We are an impact investor and community development entity that for the last 30 years has been investing under programs like the New Markets Tax Credit. It is a federal program, as Representative Norris mentioned. It started in 2000, and what happened was there's $5 billion that get allocated every year that can go anywhere in the country. So some states started getting a lot, and some states started getting very little. So around 2007, states started passing state-level New Markets Tax Credit programs, and since then, 14 states have passed similar programs to what we're discussing here in Minnesota. The results there are that states that pass these programs start attracting a lot more federal dollars and private dollars into their state, into their underserved communities, to make sure that they are getting their fair share and they're getting more than what the neighbors might be that don't have a state New Markets program. I'll tell you one quick story. In Nebraska, the state that passed their program in 2012, there's an entrepreneur in North Omaha that was in the most depressed census tract in the state. And she had a call center, and she wanted to buy back full ownership of her business from her partner and wanted to expand. She could not find financing for the life of her. She tried, and as a last-ditch effort, found financing through the New Markets Tax Credit Program. And she found an affordable loan that helped her get through to execute the plan, and she took off. She had 70 employees. When she got the loan, she ended up growing to over 200, and she stayed in North Omaha, and eventually refinanced out her New Markets investment and then found a stable banking relationship. That's the goal. It's bridge that gap between growing business into mature business where now they've got a banking partner that's able to fund their future expansions. Her business is now on the Inc. 5000 fastest growing businesses in the country, and she's the largest minority and woman-owned business in the state of Nebraska. And so it's not just state programs that do that. It's an inspired and driven entrepreneur that wants to build and grow where she's planted. But state programs like this allow entrepreneurs to do that. They get them the capital that they need, where they need it, when they need it. And a Minnesota New Markets program will bring more of that opportunity to entrepreneurs here in the state. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill? Representative Igoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, like I said, I appreciate the bill here today. I think it is going to do a lot of good things. I made sure to pull up the map here on my phone because I wanted to make sure I understood where the purple was. And it's good to see a lot of that's going to be in outstate Minnesota. My concerns are not directly related to the bill, but I think the bill is going to have issues if it's signed into law. If we look at a lot of the states that have done this, many of these states have went over and redone a lot of their permitting and regulations to streamline allowing for businesses to be able to come to the state, get their shovels in the ground, and get production underway. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, we just had the Hubert Engineered Woods Project. We had the mayor of Cohasset was just here talking about how we need to support them. You know, their project was lost over permitting regulation before we had something like this in place. So my concern with this bill is that it does go into law, and unfortunately we're not going to be able to leverage any of these investments because our state's permitting and regulatory climate is pushing everyone away at the same time. So, you know, I guess my question would be to the bill author would be, is there ways that we could work on permitting reform, regulation reform in the state? Otherwise, we're going to keep losing out. We're already seeing some of our largest corporations in the state leave because of these issues. I think it's going to be a lot harder to attract them, even with these kind of credits.
Rep. Norris.
Yeah, Chair Hassan, Representative Igoe. I think the issues that you raise are largely outside the scope of this particular bill. This bill is designed to bring a particular tool to the table to help us bring those federal dollars to our state, to bring, you know, entrepreneurship and jobs to areas that don't always have them naturally flow to them. You know, I certainly want to do everything we can to promote economic opportunity, but I think what you're raising is probably a bigger discussion that's probably better suited for some of the other bills before this committee and other committees here at the legislature.
Thank you. Rep. Igoe, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I'll just follow up. No, I guess we'll disagree. It is directly related because if we're going to put these dollars into these communities that might not always get it, like you just said, if they're going to be faced with hurdles in our state's permitting and regulation that could take them years upon years and then litigation upon litigation, these dollars are going to get wasted on that instead of actually inspiring growth in our communities and providing a lot of the opportunities that your testifier said today. So I think they are directly related, and I would look forward to having some conversations on that.
All right. Rep. Katisotun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill forward. I'm a huge supporter of tax credits in this type of usage. I've carried the angel investor tax credit previously. I know that you're carrying that as well. I think it's really important that we, in this bill, do have an equal investment percentage between the greater metro area and then greater Minnesota. I'm curious, and I was trying to find any language within the bill in that section. Should there not be as many applications in greater Minnesota or the metro area, vice versa? Like, can that money then shift? Like, can it all be allocated? Not all of it, but could more money be allocated if the grant requests don't meet that 60 million on either side of the program?
NARS.
Chair Hassan, Representative Katisotun, appreciate your support for the bill and other things like the angel tax credit. And I know the angel tax credit does have a feature like that. I'm going to actually, if I can, turn it over to my testifier who knows a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of the program to address that specific question.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, so the $60 million that's set aside for greater Minnesota and for the metro, that is divided up evenly at the very beginning of the program between community development entities like Advantage Capital, like Sunrise Bank. So at the very beginning, that entire amount is spoken for, so to speak, so that way all that work can get started on day one. So there isn't an instance where it would shift over if there's a lot left over because it's all spoken for on day one.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, thank you. So the granting organizations then that have the $60 million appropriation up front, is there any sort of, and I was then also looking at the credit recapture section on, in Subdivision 5, but would there be any sort of recall for the state if that money doesn't get spent, or do these organizations then just get to keep the money kind of ongoing and then use it for a future year? I'm just kind of, and I hope that all the money does get spent. I want to say that. I hope that we get enough applications. But in the case that we don't, does the state get that money back, or do those organizations get to keep it and use it for future grant years?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
So, yes, there are recapture provisions. If all of the funds are not out at the end of year one, the tax credits are recaptured. And then they're redistributed to the groups that were able to get their money out in an effort to make sure that the full impact of the program is able to be achieved.
Madam Chair, I have one quick follow-up. Thank you.
Quick.
Sorry. Well, it's kind of going off of what Representative Igo had said before and then talking a little bit about the recapture. But sounded like, you know, he's got some concerns on regulation, obviously. I don't think that our regulations are pushing everybody out of the state of Minnesota because we are seeing lots of growth, which is really exciting. We've got one of the strongest economies in the nation at this time. But in terms of the credit recapture section, if the money is not spent, I was seeing on the highlight section here that if it's not spent or invested within the 12 months, is there conditional investment? Like, I mean, one of these organizations isn't able to use this funding to pay for like regulatory lawsuit challenges or anything along those lines, correct? Just is used for business development?
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
You're correct. So it is used for the growth of the business or the nonprofit. So like a YMCA that might need the growth for actually building it, that's what the funds are going to be used for.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Rep. Koslowski.
Thank you, Chair, and to Rep. Norris and to our testifiers for bringing this bill forward. In my communities in greater Minnesota, this has been a really, really important tax credit, and also agree, you know, the historic tax credit and others. We've been able to utilize these dollars to revamp our North Shore Theater and, you know, bring about opportunities for arts and culture, revamp and adaptive reuse of brownfield spaces, you know, to create new hotel and meeting spaces, event space that benefits youth with hockey rinks and so many other things. That we've seen the power of this credit really energizing retail corridors, but also double down and reinforcing investment in housing right in our neighborhoods. So a lot of good here. And my question is, as we talk about the dollars that are flowing, I appreciate the questions about greater Minnesota. And we look at projects, as was referenced earlier, I think it is important to take it as in its entirety. You know, that's why the consultation with tribal nations needs to happen, to have businesses, to have enterprises coming forward. So I just wanted to throw that into the mix that looking at the cumulative impacts and actually consulting with tribal nations as a state, we have a duty and obligation to do that. And some projects did not adhere to that. So my question is, we know that with these tax credits, that tribal nations participation is low. Reading that only $1 in these investments are put in for every $100 at non-tribal entities. So could you talk to what benefits or opportunity will be for our Native nations, which are also really important for our greater Minnesota economy as well, to make sure that they're fully participating in both boosting our tribal nation economy, but our entire Minnesota economy.
Rep. Norris, or?
Yep. Madam Chair. So thank you, Representative. Completely agree. When you got to put a lot of money out in a year, the first thing that we do when a program like this passes as a CDE that participates in a lot of these is we start talking to the groups that are already in the state. And so usually it's a chamber of commerce. We're talking with local business leaders, particularly around tribal nations. It's understand where is the money best going to be used. And the only people that really know that are the people that are on the ground that are seeing it and knowing who needs the money. So we go and spend a lot of time doing the outreach to the local groups, figuring out who could really benefit from this and trying to get connected as quick as possible so we can start meeting that need. So that extends beyond just chambers of commerce. It certainly extends to tribal nations as well. And that's something that could be a priority for this as the bill passes and moves through and the money starts to flow through.
Rep. Koslowski, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you. That answers my question.
All right. Final word on your bill, Rep. Norris.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. I'll just quickly summarize by saying, you know, I think this bill is designed to get capital, jobs, and economic opportunity to places where they don't always flow naturally. This is also about bringing federal dollars back to our state and investing in entrepreneurs and communities to provide economic prosperity for all Minnesotans, and look forward to a green vote and passing it on to taxes.
All right. Well, Chair renews her motion that House File 1528 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Well, your bill is on its way. Thank you for coming to committee. All right, we're moving around this agenda today, so Rep. Smith's not here, so I will present my bill, and hopefully he will be here to present his, and now I will give the gavel to our vice chair.
Are you reading an email from these people? I got like 1,000 emails and phone calls. You know who's got it? Karen Clerk. And she wants to change it to 100 million. The East Phillips. I think it's going to be into the Columbus.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. I just wanted to let you get settled there. And Rep. Hassan moves that House File 2093 be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Is that correct?
That is the correct motion, Chair Hansen.
Thank you. And Rep. Hassan, please proceed with your bill. Members will go over to amendments after the bill has been.
I have a procedural question, Madam Chair.
Sure. Go for it, Representative Pasek.
Thank you. And with respect to the chair, and I know that this is an important issue in your district, but understanding the issue and doing a little bit of research, this is an issue that is involved in litigation. It appears to be an issue that is more an inner city of Minneapolis issue. I'm not certain why it's actually here in the economic development. We received a number of emails. Only about two actually referenced jobs or economic development in their argument for jobs and economic development within the email is a little flat. And so I'm tempted to move to table the bill because I'm not sure that this belongs here. We all have issues within our own cities, different neighborhood disputes, and I'm not certain that it belongs here, but out of respect for the chair, I won't move to table it, but that is a concern that I have. I look forward to hearing the testimony and all that, but it really should, I think the legislature and the committee should be very cautious when we bring local inner city issues.
Is there a question here? I just want to make sure we can move along as time.
Well, the question was, I'm not certain why it's in this committee, so maybe we could address that first. Otherwise, I guess I could make the motion to table it too.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative and Chair Hassan, would you like to address Representative Kosnick's question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Lead Kosnick. This is has something to do with economic development. I presented this bill in the last two terms. I've been here, this is my third term, so I've been here 5 years. I've presented this bill. This is my third time, so I'm hoping third time is the charm here. It has something to do with, it has economic development as well as jobs related to this, because with this space, if this group, the East Phillips Neighbor Institute gets the funding, the space that they're trying to develop will have housing, it would have a solar garden, as well as coffee shop, which will produce jobs for the community. So, and it's going to capital investment because they're requesting funding to redevelop this space. So that's why it's here.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Any follow-up, Representative Kosnick?
No, I appreciate it. The litigation part concerns me, but let's proceed.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Hassan, please proceed with presenting your bill. And I just want to also say thank you to everybody who has shown up to be here today. We've received your emails, we've heard your voices, and I'm really looking forward to hearing about this bill today. Thank you,
Madam Chair and members. I want to acknowledge that this space is not the easiest space for our folks from BIPOC folks. It's not the easiest space to navigate. It's a very white space, so for folks who are here, thank you very much. Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2093 today. This bill funds the East Phillips Institute in Minneapolis. It's a $20 million investment that will support the creation of the East Phillips indoor urban farm, housing, coffee shop.
It's a creative and community-driven solution to redevelop a vacant industrial site located in the green zone in South Minneapolis. When built, this farm will serve its residents well by providing jobs, job training, local food, local businesses, and community meeting space for the East Phillips community and neighborhood. To ground us in some history, East Phillips, 71% of its roughly 4,700 residents are people of color and indigenous folks. According to Minnesota Campus, nearly one-third of these residents live below the poverty line. Today, East Phillips has a large population of East African, Latinx, African American, and Native American community members. With that, Madam Chair, we have a long list of testifiers, and I want to yield my time to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. First up, we have Cassandra Holmes. We're going to switch things around. So we have a number of folks. So if, whoever comes up, just want to introduce yourself, share your name, who you're with, your pronouns, if you're comfortable, and then proceed with your testimony. So go ahead.
Danse Gananaskamotin, Nananaskamotin, Apsis, Nanahiawak, Apsis, Rachel Thunder. Say hello, and I say thank you to each of you individually, and also thank you to all of you collectively. My name is Rachel Thunder, and I stand before you today as a Nihio Nihiowak Plains Cree woman, a member of the American Indian Movement, East Phillips resident, land defender, water protector, and protector of our future generations. Today, you will hear from a diverse coalition, including residents of the East Phillips neighborhood, members of our indigenous community, board members from the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute, or EPNI, and Minneapolis City Council members, all standing in solidarity for this Roof Depot initiative and for building a better future for not only our South Minneapolis urban indigenous community, but for all human beings and for our Mother Earth. We want to acknowledge and thank Representative and Committee Chair Hodan Hassan for authoring this bill and for this committee hearing this bill. As the Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee, we ask you to grant us this critical step towards community self-determination, reconnecting our urban indigenous people to the land, creating life-sustaining income through green jobs and shared wealth for future generations of the East Phillips neighborhood and for the state of Minnesota. This bill would grant our people and community the opportunity to not only heal and remediate the polluted land of the Roof Depot site and bring an ecologically friendly economy to East Phillips, but to also grant us the autonomy to heal our community by building stronger together, connected to the land, culture, and ceremony. As indigenous people, we face multi-generational traumas from the genocide our people have experienced for over 530 years since the beginning of colonization. Initiatives like what this bill supports directly contribute to the reversal of the psychological, spiritual, and physical effects of the ongoing genocide. Our people of East Phillips have daily struggles for survival. We are a strong and resilient people coming from diverse tribal nations, working to ensure a healthy urban ecological environment and building together community stronger. Our people called upon us to stand up and save this site, not only to stop the demolition and not only to stop poisonous arsenic from being released in our community, and not only to stop the added pollution of over 800 city trucks moving permanently into our community. Our people called upon us to protect the future of our community and all people in this area. We are asking today for this opportunity for our people, as the original people of Turtle Island, to create a place in South Minneapolis that we can heal and strengthen our community. We are asking for you as state legislators to be on the right side of history, to stand with us, to stand with this indigenous-led movement, to grant us the opportunity to buy land back that has belonged with us since the beginning of time, to grant us our sovereign rights to protect the health and well-being of our people and future generations, and to grant us the ability to truly have land back even in an urban environment, to grant us autonomy to feed and heal our people, to set an example nationwide,
to create a blueprint of green jobs, reversing urban pollution, and to take a stand against urban environmental injustice. We ask you to stand with us to ensure a better tomorrow for all people. The community of South Minneapolis, the East Phillips neighborhood, and indigenous community all stand together asking for this opportunity to build our community back stronger, grounded in culture, providing green jobs, and preventing further added pollution to an already heavily polluted community. And I want to thank this committee again for hearing this bill. Hi, hi.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your testimony, and if you would please introduce yourself for the committee, share your pronouns if you're comfortable and who you're with, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Dean DeVolis. I am chair of the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute. That is a community group, which the majority you see behind me, that has been leading this effort and striving hard for this project over 10 years. This is not a Johnny-come-lately opportunity, but one that's been well worked through many years and very hard fought for. As you mentioned, litigation and other means to get this across. I'm going to change my presentation a little bit to really talk about the job creation and the ownership creation in response to the question that was asked earlier. The building itself is 230,000 square feet. That's a lot of real estate in which to create an opportunity. And it was built by Sears Roebuck. It's a quality building. It stands well. The ownership of this building is going to be set up in three tiers. Third is going to be owned by the community itself that you see behind me with income down to 20% AMI. So the idea is that generational wealth is developed within each community. A third will be owned by the tenants themselves, and we have tenants of that 230,000 square feet. We actually sold it out two times over from a variety of indigenous businesses, Main Street businesses, East African businesses, Little Farm, Urban Farm, Latinx businesses wanting to be part of this vision. So this is not just something that lacks interest or thought. And then the third would be outside private investors that are interested, that we actually submitted letters to the President of Minneapolis City Council committing the investment dollars, and they're still active today on it. It'll have the largest solar array in there yet, 230,000 square feet. That'll generate in itself 400,000. The pamphlet that was just handed out to you see here describe what's going to build, and I'll give a brief description of it. We have hydroculture companies and aquaculture companies interested. Some that want up to 50, 60,000 square feet, like Blue Water Farms. Others, like Gandhi Mahal, Rahel, who you knew from the riots, is willing to move there to do his smaller aquaculture operations. We have East African businesses that want to create markets. We have a World Cafe. We have a farmer's market within this. We have housing for the homeless in a small housing community on this. We have a community kitchen as part of this. This project generates between 200 and 400 jobs based on the square footage and based on the business we have. It generates in East Phillips neighborhood $600 million as part of it. And the genius of the thing, because this is the community's vision, not mine, it's run and managed by the community by a nonprofit board. So this is an idea that allows the community to grow and develop a future that goes beyond the $20 million that's in this bill that will give for generations thereafter. So I really, please consider this, because if this is done, and I'll say when this is done, this will set up an economic model that will allow community to participate, community to generate wealth, and set a standard for projects like the Lake and Hennepin development, known as the Kmart site, the Upper Harbor, and national projects beyond it because of what this represents and the structure it's being created. We have a very intelligent, genius community that has put this together, and that's why I'm very proud to serve in this seat, because they're the leaders of this. I'm strictly the corporate hand that help create the vision. But credit to the people behind me, because that's where the genius has come from, and that's where the fire in this is occurring. So, could be members, Chair, thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Karen Clark. If you would like to introduce yourself for the committee, share your pronouns if you would like, name who you are with, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much. My name is Karen Clark. I'm a resident of East Phillips, and been there for about 45 years, I think. A person who serves on the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute board, work with the Women's Environmental Institute, which is an environmental justice organization. I was here before for a number of years. I served in the legislature, representing, at that time it was 63A, now it's B. B, yes. So I want to thank Representative Hassan for allowing us to bring this bill before you. It means so much to all of us, and we're grateful for her sponsorship, and we're grateful for this committee looking at it. And it's very appropriate that we be before the Economic Development Committee, and I'll tell you why. And I'm just going to go back a little bit in legislative history. This legislature has voted twice before to help this community deal with the issue of environmental injustice, two times. The first time was in 2008 when we passed legislation that was based on, I think you see the map here ahead of, in front of you. It's based on the fact that this area of Minneapolis, East Phillips neighborhood, has a very high disproportionate incidence of toxic exposure that causes public health problems, public health emergencies in some cases. And the things that we documented, I brought this map because this is what the legislature looked at in 2008 when they passed the bill. And they said, oh my goodness. And maybe I could just point, let you know, there's also, I believe you have a copy of this in your handouts. It just shows that there's a high, extremely high incidence of asthma, of childhood lead poisoning. Those are two definitely specifically related to environmental toxic exposures. Heart cardiac disease also related to environmental exposures. And a number of other issues that go on top of the fact that this area was at that time still a US EPA designated arsenic Superfund site, that we had arsenic all over our ground. And they cleaned up, took away the yards of about 600 of us who lived there. I was number 30. I had quite a bit of arsenic on my ground. So I hope you can understand that what we're coming from is a need that law said. Is that a little too close? Is that better? Okay. That law said that this neighborhood has such problems, disproportionate problems in terms of toxic exposure, that you need a special law that will protect you and require our state agencies that deal with pollution, MPCA and also the Department of Health, to have a stricter threshold for pollution being allowed from any facility. And that law, believe it or not, my city that I love, my city of Minneapolis, claims they're not covered by that law. We're here to say, yes, they are. And this legislature said that this law was there to protect has a number of provisions. One of them says within a half a mile of the arsenic triangle. And I actually brought some copies of that if you want to look at it. What you need to know is that the city's plan, as was discussed a little bit earlier, would increase our environmental toxic exposures. It would do it by several ways. One of them, one of the most serious one, is increasing traffic. They want to consolidate their public works facility, bring it in all into our little neighborhood from around the city, and that brings us all kinds of vehicles that contribute to this traffic congestion. And perhaps you know this, but mobile sources traffic is the number one cause of asthma in our state and around the country. And the environmental justice communities like ours, that's well documented, and we just put it on a map there when we were showing it to legislators years ago. And it's also the number one reason our kids miss school. Asthma, very serious. And this is asthma that's causing people to go to emergency rooms and so on. The second thing is that we passed a law in 2017 that gave money to this project, $319,000. Again, we're not newcomers on this. The city said, and the legislature said, you need help to do the kinds of work that you're trying to do. And again, as Dean DeVolos just talked about earlier, we have a very clear plan. And the money that they gave us, we used for architectural drafting of the indoor urban farm. We used it for hiring. We hired a community organizer. It actually said community organizer in the bill. We allowed various parts of the community to have funding to go out and do outreach. And it was to all of our wonderfully diverse community organizations that did that. I think, am I running out of time here? Okay. I just wanted to say, so this legislature is well suited to be back here again because we've been opposed by our own city. We need the resources to do, as I think we have talked about, we want to buy the building and the land back. And we want to keep it a very healthy place instead of another industrial site. And the city is actually turning it into another industrial site in some ways. One of the reasons that we had it before the Economic Development Committee, because from the very first bill we talked about job creation and job training and having good living wage jobs. So it's appropriate to be back here, and that's still part of our request. I'm gonna leave time for other folks. I know it's limited. I just, again, want to thank you for authoring this bill. We're just very hopeful. We have gotten support from around the country, and I know that there is now a federal bill to try to do the same thing that you all did in 2008 to create a cumulative health impact analysis requirement that makes the limitation on pollution much stricter. So cumulative health impact analysis, you can be proud the state of Minnesota was the first state to have that law. And when we passed it, the people from MPC said to me, Karen, how do you expect us to enforce this law? It doesn't exist anywhere. And we said, well, look at this map. This is why you need to enforce it. And they did. We wanted it to be bigger than just our neighborhood. And I know the north side and other parts of our city need it too in different parts of the state. But I think my time probably is this about up, and I want to thank you. Be glad to answer questions later.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up. Thank you for coming. Please share your name. If you're with an organization, share your pronouns if you'd like, and move ahead with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. So, bonjour, relatives. Relatives. And y'all are my relatives. My name is Cassie Holmes. My spirit name is Niwin Makwai Kwe, Four Bears Woman, and she, her. Most importantly, I want to just jump right in, is that we're coming to the committee with facts that are from the Department of Transportation, the Department of Health. And all those dots that you see that are accumulated in the East Phillips neighborhood and the north side, and excuse me because I'm emotional, but those dots are faces. They're not just dots on that. One of those dots was my son. His name was Trinidad Flores. And he died from environmental injustice and racism. He had a heart condition at 14 he wasn't born with and died at 16 years old. My best friend who I grew up with, her daughter, early 20s, just had her second child, went into the hospital because she thought she had congestion and never came home. She died from a heart condition she wasn't born with, also raised in Little Earth in East Phillips. So we're not just coming to you guys with all these facts because they're important, believe me they are, but because we are burying our children, we're burying our loved ones from environmental racism and injustice. And you guys know that, and you see it daily. I wanted to share that because we need opportunities, we need jobs, we need to do better for our kids, we need to do better for our community. And this committee, when they gave the $319,000 to EPNI, I want to let you know what Little Earth did with that funding. We got $30,000 of that funding, and every penny of it went to the Little Earth farm, our little farm in the back. And we were able to hire children, our children who were missing school because of asthma, our children who were missing school because they didn't have the funds or their parents didn't have the funds to buy them nice school clothes, so they skipped school. So what we did was we took those kids and we hired them from ages 5 to 17. They came in and they asked for a job application. They filled it out. They had met with our executive director in term, Jolene Jones, at the time, and they were hired on the spot to work our farm. And to see them kids so happy to come out, and they were able at the end of that summer to buy their own school clothes. They had $300 to buy their own school clothes. And I, along with other community members, took them shopping. And to see them kids during catching that very first, that school bus during the very first day, they were in their garden waiting for the bus with their new clothes, talking about all the stuff they learned while they were growing food in the garden. All the stories that they learned from the elders and about the medicine. And to see them so successful and excited to go to school, and every year since then, we've had more kids apply for that job. Up to 70 kids now, and they get $500 each. They get $300 for school clothes, $100 to do whatever they want to do with it, and $100 to take their family out on a family night. These are the kind of opportunities that this would create in our community, but on a much larger scale, if we are successful. And we can be successful. We've proven that. I quickly just want to talk a little bit about that. With the city plan, they talk a lot about water, but in the fine print, we know nothing's going to change with our water. It's not going to be better. It's not going to glitter. It's still going to go on as it's going on. But what will happen if they're successful is that it can become poisonous. Not can, it will be. Because this is the same arsenic that's encapsulated under this building. That's the same arsenic that was picked up over 600 homes because of how toxic it was. So I want to make sure that we're aware that this is the same arsenic that will be affecting us. I also want to talk about how I was in a meeting with the mayor, with other community folks, and we talked about cars being electric. Some of the questions that were asked, that I asked, that weren't answered, was if that happened in the state of Minnesota or in our city, would East Phillips be the first on that list? Would Northside be the first on that list, since we're the most impacted? We still haven't had an answer to that. But what we were told was that not all cars will be turned over right away, because they still have good running cars, and when those break down is when they'll start looking at making those cars electric. We know that they have an energy and environmental design from LEED that's certified, but I asked, is that the minimum level or the maximum level? We still haven't had an answer to that. The building itself, I just shared a video recently. We went in there in 2017, and it was in really great condition. And there's proof of that in the video that I recorded and shared. Bob Friddle was actually the facilitator at that time who walked us through that, along with Will Ellen. We were given a choice of 3 acres, but it was also with the exception of the pollution, which we cannot allow, and we will not allow, and we won't take scraps and still pollute our children for jobs. Maybe if we get them jobs, that will be killing our children at home, and all of our paycheck will be going for medical bills. I guess in conclusion is what I want to say is I want to thank this committee for your past, for giving us those dollars, that we were able to hire those community youth and to see them grow and to blossom and to learn very extremely important values in word, work, food, soil, and family. Able to buy their own clothes and supplies, and the smiles and the glint in their eyes are proof that the community plan is not only needed, but it works. And it is a positive outcome when we and you invest in your constituents and your children. Let's not add more dots on that map. Miigwech.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and thank you for sharing your story. We're so sorry to hear about your losses, but thank you for bringing their voices here today and sharing that. Next testifier, please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you're comfortable. If you're with an organization, please state that and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan, and thank you to the committee. My name is Daniel Colton Schmidt. I am with EPNI. I am volunteering on their communications team, and it's my pleasure to speak with you guys today. So first thing I want to acknowledge is that I'm not here as an individual, but I'm here as a representative of my community and of my neighborhood. I live in East Phillips, just two blocks from the Roof Depot building. And this issue is really personal for me when I hear stories about my friend Cassie and about other people in the neighborhood who have gone through similar health disparities at such a young age. I'm scared for my health. I'm 24 years old and I'm scared for my health, and that is really, really a sad thing. And I do want to respond to Representative Kosnick about the economic development question. And one of the health environments programs analyses of the cost of asthma in 2012 said that asthma costed the state of Minnesota $6.7 billion in 1 year. So this question of environmental injustice is absolutely an economic question.
Daniel, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I see folks looking at the time. This committee is going to until 12:30 today, so I just want to announce that. We do have one more bill up, and so if we can, for the remaining testifiers, just try to keep us tight so we can try to wrap up within the next 5 to 10 minutes or so would be great. So sorry to interrupt
you. No, I appreciate Please that. The rest of it I've written, and it's very short. So as a politically minded person, when I moved to Minneapolis, I was really excited about the public participation goals that were adopted by the city. I thought that in Minneapolis, developers wouldn't be making backroom deals with politicians to undercut the communities, but I learned that that's not the truth. I learned that a lot of these goals are really just symbolic. And so we are asking the state to support where the city has not been able to support us. So I was told by one of the mayor's political aides that it was unclear how East Phillips residents really feel about the urban farm versus the public works plan. In fact, the city's analysis of their engagement with public participation says, and I quote, that the city has informed, consulted, involved, collaborated, and empowered the community, citing that, quote, local organizations such as EPNI have door-knocked the community. I want to make it clear that EPNI's door knocking had nothing to do with the city's engagement. In fact, we were out there door knocking because the city was remarkably unengaged in our community. I was doing the door knocking, and so I know that every single person, every single household that I spoke to about this plan was in favor of the urban farm. We also, last Sunday, had a block party where over 1,000 residents showed up to celebrate the injunction that we won in court on Friday. So what I want to say in closing is that my community is speaking as loudly as we possibly can, but public participation requires listening. And so we come here asking you guys to support us in this fight for our community. Thank you all.
Thank you so much for your testimony. If the next testifier could please make their way to the table. Thank you. If you could please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you like. If you're with an organization, please share that and proceed with your testimony. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you, Chair Hassan. I am Robin Wansley, and I am the Minneapolis City Council member for Ward 2. And I come to you today to ask that you support House 52093, which will provide the community with the funds needed to make the East Phillips indoor farm a reality. And while I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak in favor of this legislation, I am very disappointed that I have to be here today. But I'm here today because the city of Minneapolis has failed our East Phillips residents. Currently, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey and a slim majority of my fellow council members have chosen to move forward with the Hiawatha Maintenance Facility while knowing that this project will have long-lasting negative public health impacts on a community that is one of two of the most polluted neighborhoods in the entire state of Minnesota. And over the past 8 years, the East Phillips community has built a massive base of support for a different vision. Many of our community members have articulated that vision of converting the rooftop depot site into an indoor farm that will provide clean energy, organic food, affordable housing, and green jobs to this community. They've built a strong coalition of city, county, and statewide supporters who are all committed to making this project be successful. Meanwhile, the city has received over 1,000 public comments opposing the public works facility placement in East Phillips. In fact, our very own city policies, like the Minneapolis Green Zones and the Minneapolis Climate Action Plan, were designed to protect communities like East Phillips from projects like the Hiawatha Memphis facility, and knowing that it would just exacerbate more environmental harm for these type of communities. That said, you all, our state lawmakers, are literally our last hope. Please do not ignore the pleas of our East Phillips residents, as our Minneapolis city leaders have done for almost a decade. Your vote today will affirm that the lives of East Phillips residents do in fact matter. And I ask that you lead where Minneapolis has failed. Please vote in favor of House 52093. And do not let the retaliatory racist actions of our city deny the East Phillips community the just and sustainable future that it deserves. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier can make their way to the table. Once you arrive, please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you would like, any organization you're affiliated with, and please proceed with your testimony, knowing that we are trying to wrap up within the next 5 minutes or so, as we do have another bill on the calendar.
Madam Chair, I just have a quick comment, if that's okay. My name is Delaney Russell, she, her, hers. And I am a Sierra Club volunteer and EPNI volunteer. And I just wanted to address the council, the representative's concern that this committee not get involved when EPNI is in litigation with the city. And as some of you may be aware, the judge recently issued a temporary injunction pending our appeal. And in his order, or in his comments, he said, "I strongly encourage you to come to the table and renegotiate to settle this case. This funding would specifically enable us to do it. It would specifically enable both parties to walk away. It's a win-win situation. The city would be able to meet its goals as well as its racial justice commitments, and this neighborhood would have an economic opportunity that it has envisioned and so desperately needs." Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any further testifiers that wish to speak on this bill? Seeing none, I will... Oh, I'm so sorry. Once you arrive, please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like. If you're with an organization, please state that and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Good afternoon. My name is Tapeji Talwechak Bailey. I'm a descendant and enrolled member of the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. I just came here because I wanted to speak a little bit about, you know, the things that, you know, I moved here 3 years ago. So I worked with the shelters here. I worked with women here. I worked and canvassed a lot in the area. So I think, you know, supporting this bill moving forward, you know, is a plus for all of us. You know, we still here are on Dakota stolen land. You know, some of us were forced and exiled out of here onto the reservations in South Dakota. So coming here, you know, as that leader and as that representative of those on a reservation and witnessing here, I think that the funding for this institution and what their vision is to create that force, that unity. I myself, you know, sit in the shelters and listen to women and men talk about, oh, you know, we wish we had a garden. You know, I wish it was okay that we can go outside and, you know, and plant this. You know, so I get really nervous a lot, but I just, you know, I want to say that, you know, this this vision that the creation that these people, you know, that are talking about is the fact that this is going to help a lot of people out there who are facing these traumas and that are living in these low income, you know, places. And we all know that during the riots that this was a land grab, you know. And as far as, you know, putting that ramp right in the middle of one of the poorest places in the city and forcing those people out again onto the streets, I just come to say, you know, that you know, support these people in their visions and give them a chance to see, you know, what we can do and create, you know, when we put our minds together. And with that being said, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any others who wish to speak on this bill? I'm going to ask you to please keep your testimony very short. We have less than a few minutes left on this. We have one more bill on the calendar. So please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, and any organization you're with, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair, committee members, Chair Hassan, and legislative staff, and everyone who testified before me. My name is Spencer Polk. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a resident of East Phillips, a member of the Minneapolis Southside Green Zone Council, and a grad student in urban planning, housing, and community development. I wanted to provide some geographic historic context the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute is working within. In the 1950s, when the federal government was building suburban housing, this is where the highways were built. I-94, I-35, and Highway 55 circle this neighborhood. When the city demolished 40% of downtown for parking lots, much of which was affordable housing through the Federal Urban Renewal Program, that community was displaced to Phillips in South Minneapolis. When the federal government attempted to decimate indigenous communities through the Urban Relocation Program, this is where the community found home amidst false hopes and housing discrimination. Jumping to 2020, When spillover from racial unrest affected commercial areas along Lake Street, this site adjacent to the Minneapolis 3rd Precinct is one place those businesses and community look to find healing, new life, and solidarity, and a more just city. It is in this context residents of South Minneapolis have developed a vision for a community cooperatively owned resource hub that will nourish culture, community, housing stability, and resilience. I ask you to support HF2039 and urge you to support repair in this community. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any others? Please introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, if you're with an organization, and please mind the time, if we can, to make sure we can wrap up as soon as possible, and proceed with your testimony, please. Thank you.
What up, council? Committee, sorry. I'll keep it 60 seconds or less. My name is Jonathan Kent, he, him pronouns. I live in Minnetonka, and I care deeply about Minneapolis, amongst other places. I just have a really quick, I guess, request, which is, A, it doesn't seem like it's necessary, but if there needs to be 5-10 more minutes to discuss this, let's talk it out. We're all here right now. No reason to rush anymore. Like, everybody's here, do your job, all that. Second thing is... There is no legitimate case whatsoever to not pass this and to not listen to the residents of this neighborhood. And hand to God, like, I will move into that location and not leave until this is right. And I'm on record with that, and I got friends. It's not a threat. It's just this is what we have to do when people don't do their jobs. And I hope Mayor Frey is watching, and I'm putting him on notice. Like, next election, like, I don't even know if he's eligible, but, like, that guy sucks, and, like, this is part of why he sucks, and I want the record to show that. So, and I've met with him. I'm not like throwing this around. So anyway, I'm gonna wrap it up. This is why we can't wait, right? Like, it's the end of new month. Black History Month was just happening. Why we can't wait? The best time is now. Do your job. Protect these people, and let's move on to more important matters. Actually, this is the most important, but let's get to other stuff.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks for your time.
Are there other comments? Okay, well, thank you everybody for your testimony today. Thank you, committee members. I know we're going a little bit longer. Turn it over to member discussion at this point. Oh, I'm sorry. We have an amendment as well. Representative Koznick, are you moving this amendment?
We have the DE1 amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. Would you like to move the DE1 amendment, Representative Koznick?
Yeah, and I know I didn't realize we were going to be asked to go over time, so I know other members have different commitments throughout the day, but I appreciate the members that are still present. And this is an important issue, and I know it's an important issue for your district. It's critically important and been in the news quite a bit. I just still have concerns the legislature getting involved in the middle of an inner city dispute that's been well litigated and well documented. I don't know that it's appropriate for that. But putting that aside, looking at hearing the testimony and looking at the project, we've got a $20 million project for a nonprofit that hasn't filed their financial statements, charity statements with the Attorney General's office. The last I think that we were able to see was 2019. And so we have big concerns that you're asking for $20 million in this bill. There was mention of $100 million. I presume there's other bills, or maybe the public's misinformed, that it's not a $100 million bill, but that's what we've been, I've seen some comments that it is. This bill isn't $100 million, it's $20. But I have issues whether it's $100 million or $20 million or $2 million, that a nonprofit that hasn't even filed their proper financial statements with the Attorney General. So what I think we need to do is hit the brakes here. It was mentioned by a testifier that this would be operated by the neighborhood nonprofit, but if they're not even filing their required financial statements, it's malfeasance to award a grant of $20 million to that. So we would, with the amendment, provide funding for the organization to actually file their financial statements and get things in order. And so that's what the amendment does. It's the only fiscally responsible thing to do. It's more generous than even needed to actually get some help to file your financial statements. So members, I would ask for your support in the amendment.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Koznick. Is there any discussion to the DE1 amendment?
Madam
Representative
Chair,
Hassan?
While I respectfully disagree with you on this amendment, and I ask, you know, members to vote no on it, I'll have someone from the organization speak on the filings, because I don't know anything about it.
And I'm sorry, we're not taking testimony on the amendments. I apologize. Thank you, Chair.
We have filed with the IRS.
I am told that they have filed, and we are more than happy to send you guys the copies as soon as we get them. And I want to just also acknowledge that this bill is going to capital investments, so it's just moving from this committee to another committee. So
thank you, Chair Hassan.
Yeah,
Representative Koznick, do you have a further comment?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I'll withdraw the amendment, but I think the point is extremely valid. But the fact is it hasn't been filed. It's not on the Attorney General's website. For the most recent year, I think it was 2020 or 2019, and there was an operating loss on there. So there's no business plan to uphold. There's no confidence, and I can't in good conscience for the taxpayers in Minnesota support this bill. But I'll withdraw the amendment on that. But the point should be well taken. And I guess we'll leave it at that. But if there's a new updated filings, I'd certainly be interested in seeing that to give the legislature confidence that the organization can handle $100 million financing. But when you don't file your financial statements, I think that's a first clue that maybe we are biting off a little bit more than they're ready to do.
Thank you, Madam Representative Chair. Koznick. Go ahead, Representative Hassan.
I want to say that, Lead Koznick, we're all here for accountability. People trusted us with their vote. We have to be accountable to them. So I will follow up with the organization, and we'll make sure that those documents are sent to everyone in the committee.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. With that, Representative Koznick has withdrawn the DE1 amendment. Any discussion to the bill?
I know we're trying
go to... Go ahead, Chair Representative Koznick.
Yep, thanks, and I appreciate the patience of the committee members. I know the motion is to take it to capital investments, but that's not the way the bill is written, and so I don't know what the procedure for that is, but that isn't the way the bill is written, and it, there's issues with the whole thing. Largest is that, you know, it's gone through the courts of appeals. You know, there's talk about environmental issues that the city of Minneapolis has provided with the Department of Ag and the Department of Pollution Control, that the plan that they have to remediate that is sufficient. The courts have said as such. So I just not able to support this bill here. I still don't think that it should be in front of the legislature. I think when we look in a couple of weeks from here, we'll see what happens in the courts. And there's no acquisition money here for this project either in this, so I don't know where, if that's in the other $80 million, if we could get clarification on that, if there's another bill with the other $80 million to even acquire the property. So why would we do $20 million? Because that's not the way the bill is written.
Okay, Representative Hassan, there was a whole lot of questions in that comment, so would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Lead Koznick, for your comments. Like I said, this bill has been in front of this committee the third time, and we sent it from this committee to capital investment. And yes, the community is asking for $100 million, and I don't know if we can guarantee them the $100 million, so this bill is going to capital investment. The plan is to maybe amend it in capital investment to increase the funds, but we're here today, and the reason why we're here is there is economic development and jobs related to this bill, so that's the piece we're hearing today.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Any follow-up, Representative Koznick?
I don't have any more. I think it's been kind of vetted out a little bit here, and we can continue.
Thank you. Any other members wish to speak? Representative Feist.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to speak up in support of this funding and thank everyone who came and spoke. And I was excited about one of the amendments I wanted to respond to, but it was withdrawn, but I just wanted to mention it anyway. So one of the amendments kind of had a public safety angle, and I wanted to mention that there's actually research around how green spaces actually are like enhance public safety and support communities and children and youth. So one of the amendments was going to try to spread the funding around to go towards children and youth directly, looking at community safety and drug use prevention, and I just wanted to mention that this proposal in and of itself will serve a lot of that purpose, and so I just wanted to mention that. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, to Representative Hassan and to all of our testifiers here. Bujou, Bizendawieg, hello, all my relatives, Ozawa, Anakwad, Magizin, and Dodem, Masada, Kong, and Dunjaba. As you greeted us, I greet you back in my traditional ways as well. I just want to say, sort of zooming into us, like have a us moment, I want to say that you are victors and our community is amazing and this is the pride of our nation, exactly what you should be doing, and you belong here in this space and in every space. These are our homelands, and don't let anybody ever make you feel like you have to shrink. You know, just keep standing our sacred ground, okay? Zoom back out to everybody. As somebody who holds a Master of Business Administration, sitting here in this conversation is emotional, and I can feel it. I can feel our spirits, our bodies viscerally, and somebody so eloquently shared from their heart that that it's okay to feel our emotions because that means that we're connected here and here. And as Indigenous peoples, as people of culture, our data is very scientific. We've got maps, we've got facts and figures. It's just that ours also includes our heart. And that also means that it includes our babies and our aunties and our grandmas and our future generations. And to say that this is not an economic development issue to people who in the face who are the original caretakers and the original creators of our economy, is just absurd to me. Looking at business and economic development, everything we do is economic development. In this project that we have before us, and I am excited to be able to bring it forward to capital investment where I also sit, I know many of these questions are going to get answered. I know that we have been working with many other nonprofits to make sure that the documents, that everything is in order. But to say to a community who, because of our government, is here, as has been said, from extermination policies, assimilation, urban relocation, there is a reason why we have one of the largest urban indigenous populations in Minnesota right here in Twin Cities. My uncles were sent to Chicago and to Los Angeles, plopped here, separated from our land culture, our economies that we've created. We belong with this land. And what I see in this proposal, where we face some of the highest rates of poverty, green jobs, good paying jobs that's going to give us chances to train our own, to build up our own, to hopefully have good paying union jobs and access for second chance opportunities, that where we're homeless in our own homelands, that this is going to give us housing, and it's going to put the future into our hands, into our people's hands, to be able to create that housing. And what I love about this proposal is that it gives us the opportunity, as we've seen bills before in this committee, to be able to have opportunity for cooperative home ownership, that this bill does that. And there's so much more I could go on and on, and I know we're short of time, but this conversation, I too was supposed to be somewhere else, but this is so important. Our relatives are so important. Connection to our medicines, we've heard, we can't separate the work that we're doing at the legislature, though I understand we have processes and decorum and protocol why we don't talk about other bills. But I just had a bill before the Education Committee last week where we came with our community and our tribal nations about what it is I heard you talk about, growing our medicines, that we need our medicines in our school and in our workplaces, that's going to help us be connected and be more productive folks to be contributing to our communities. So there's so much here, and as I was looking at the handouts that were shared, some words really struck out to me that, you know, we're done with the government taking from us. And what has been taken and then put on us, and yet in the face of that, to continue to come here to rise up with this vision for not just ourselves, but have solutions for our entire communities, right? Beyond just indigenous folks, beyond black and brown folks. This is good for everybody. I think we ought to support that. And we're done taking scraps. And as people who are called historically underrepresented, excluded, whatever you want to say, fact of the matter is that we're people who have done more with less. And this bill gives us a sure footing to do more with more. And so I hope that what we see and what we've heard here is that we look at this bill and we look at this community and vision, that maybe we can dream a little bit more like the folks who just came before us. So, miigwech.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Any other members wish to speak? Seeing none, Chair Hassan, would you like to have final comments?
Yes, Madam Chair. First, I want to thank the community. Thank you for being here. The first day of this committee, we grounded ourselves in land and labor acknowledgement, and that wasn't just for a show, and we weren't doing that just to say, hey, you know, we're woke or we care about this only, but I said that I care about equity, and I'm going to continue bringing the voices that are never here in this space, and to make sure that the community that we represent are represented. So today we have members from our First Nation, our black and brown communities coming to us and telling us to correct an injustice. You can do that by supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. And I just want to say it's been an honor to chair this committee today. I just am so proud of you all for coming forward and fighting for your communities, and I just want to take this opportunity to say that. So with that, we'll move to our vote. Chair Hassan renews her motion that House File 2093 be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
I've been moved by the testimony. I want to go on record as supporting this, so I'd like to ask for a roll call.
A roll call having been requested. All those in... Do I have to ask for everybody? Okay, we just asked. Having a roll call been requested, the clerk will take... Or our legislative assistant will take the roll on this bill. Please proceed, Elijah.
Chair Hassan.
Chair Hassan votes aye.
Hassan, aye. Vice Chair Hansen.
Vice Chair Hansen, aye.
Vice Chair Hansen, aye. Lead Koznick?
No.
Koznick? No. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Rep Feist? Aye. Rep Katiza Watun?
Aye.
Rep Katiza Watun? Aye. Rep Kozlowski?
Aye.
Rep Kozlowski? Aye. Rep Richardson? Excused. Rep Richardson? Excused. Rep Smith?
Aye.
Rep Smith? Aye. Rep Zhang? Excused. Rep Igo?
No.
Rep Igo? No. Rep Perriman?
No.
Rep Perriman? No. Rep Schumacher?
No.
Rep Schumacher? No. Rep Wiener?
No.
Rep Wiener? No. With that, the roll has been closed.
Thank you. And with that, House File 2093 has been re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. And the final votes, I'm sorry, I'm new here, guys. Thank you for rolling with me on this one. Having 6 ayes and 5 nays, House File 2093 has been re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Thank you, members. Members, before you leave today, we will have House File 1922 in your folders. Please keep that in your folders. We will do that next time. So please do not throw those away. Let's save some paper. Thank you. And with that, everybody, we are adjourned.